the nature of the way we like to work is to involve you in an experiential process. And the reason for that is this, that what I find is that I already know far more than I'm making use of. I have all kinds of ideas of how things should be done, could be done, so forth, but I find that I often don't do them, or don't really understand why I don't do them, or how they relate to what's going on in my life. And actually, as we talk about human behavior and the desire to understand that, we have all that we need in terms of resource right here in this room. We've got a whole group of humans, and all we need to do is become aware of what's happening with us and in us if we want to understand human behavior and human dynamics. And so we like to guide you in a process of discovery so that you can both take a look at something going on in yourself, see how it happens in you, check it out with someone else, say, how did it happen in you? It's different, maybe. And then we will add some interpretation, some ideas, some handles, some labels, some way of understanding what happens. And so there'll be those three kinds of steps to the process. I would also say, if you really want to get what the class is about, to participate. However, if participating is very difficult for you and you would rather not, then you are responsible for what you do, and I want you to know that you have the choice to not participate if you do not wish to. And that's okay to sit and watch if that's what you want to do. I would like to suggest to you in the balcony that with this style, if you would like to get down and get involved in the group down here, I think it'll be more meaningful to you. So I would invite you to come down, because I'll be asking you to pick partners and so forth and do things with people. And so if you want to come down, fine. Okay, let's start with, I'm Dale Jampgard from Portland, Oregon, and work with Lutheran Family Service of Oregon, and
I'm Ricky Jampgard. I live near him.
No, I was going to say, I'm from Milwaukee, Oregon, which happens to be a suburb of Portland. I have worked with Dale with small groups for the last 7 years. I am in the process now of getting my master's in counseling. I've had a lot of that kind of experience, of course, although my original background was as a teacher and wife, mother, etc. That's kind of what I bring. The fact that I'm a real estate agent just is on the side, but I also work at that.
Now, also to mention that this is designed as a two-hour workshop and is a process that continues to build through the 2 hours, so I would encourage you to stay and go to the second dinner or lunchtime if you want to kind of get where we're going with the process. Again, however, that's your choice, so we will accept your decision on that. Okay.
I want to read, to begin the class today, I want to read from the Gospel of Matthew, in that as Matthew talks and as Jesus talks in here, I think they're talking about some of the things we are dealing with today. In Matthew 13, verse 10 to 15, it says, "Then the disciples came and said to him, 'Why do you speak to them in parables?' And he answered them, 'To you it has been given to know the secrets of the kingdom of heaven, but to them it has not been given. For to him who has will more be given, and he will have abundance, but from him who has not, even that what he has will be taken away. This is why I speak to them in parables, because seeing they do not see, and hearing they do not hear, nor do they understand. With them indeed is fulfilled the prophecy of Isaiah, which says, You shall indeed hear, but never understand, and you shall indeed see, but never perceive. For this people's heart has grown dull, and their ears are heavy of hearing, and their eyes they have closed, lest they should perceive with their eyes, and hear with their ears, and understand with their heart, and turn for me to heal them.
What we dealt with yesterday was under the title, But I Think I Am Alive. And what I hear in this text is a description of deadness. Yet if we would have asked the people that were being described, are you alive, they would have said, yes, of course I'm alive. And so what's that about? All through the scriptures is this talk about whether you're alive or dead. I came that you might have life and have it abundantly, which assumes that you don't have life and have it abundantly. And we also talked then about the wages of sin. That is death, but not just the death at an end, but a deadness. So Jesus talks about those who have a little bit and think they have it, but will lose even what they have. Because ultimately, if we don't have faith as the basis of life, we think we're alive, but gradually we grow dull and hardened, and we don't hear, and we don't see, and we don't perceive, and we don't understand. And so the answer for it is that we're dead. And that's hard to hear. And I, you know, it was helpful for me to hear it from another direction. People in the human potential movement are saying we're only using 10 to 15 to maybe at the most 20% of our functioning capacity as persons. To a great extent, we bind up our energy, we tie up our capacities, and we, in a sense, are dead in terms of our potential as persons. I also then believe that Jesus came not just to show us God and his love and his mercy, but to show us our human potential. And it's not just the things that I can do, but it is what we can do because we are a creation of God. It's what God intended for us. And so he blows our mind when he said, greater things than I have done will you do. And then we begin to look at the things Jesus did, and the healing, and the knowing, and the perceiving, and the loving. And he kind of invites us into a banquet of life and weeps over the city because you don't even seem to have an idea what I'm trying to say to you. So this is the issue. Are we alive or dead? When we come together in the fellowship of faith, do we expect anything to happen? Are we looking for anything, or is it life as usual? Oh, I know what's going to happen when I go to church. We sing a couple songs, we hear a couple words, we pray, and nothing's going to be very different this week than last week, so. My concern is that in addition to the healing of the gospel, it is an invitation into a greater potential and possibility in life. So yesterday we did some exploring of the ways in which we deaden ourselves. And in brief, it's this, that when we are born, my hunch is that we are born and rather soon experience a fear of being nobody. We come out of the nice warm womb. We're thrown into the world, it kind of moves on us, and we're not sure where we are or who we are, whether we really are somebody. And out of that anxiety that we have, plus the anxiety that is communicated by our parents, because they're anxious about who they are, and they also get anxious about who we're going to be, we are afraid. And it is out of that fear of being nobody that we begin to try to create a somebody. I've got to figure out who is it I can make myself into in order to have a place and in order to get recognized. And so we begin to shape ourselves to be a somebody. We tune into our parents. What do you want of me? Oh, I'm supposed to be perfect, or super good, or extra nice, or beautiful, or strong, or something. Ah, I'll be that. Then I'll be a somebody. And we call this in TA language a script. We begin to get a sense of our own life story and then proceed to live it out. And what we do is we go on then and pick our friends and pick our situations in life in such a way that we can live out our story, whatever we think it might be. Now the problem with that is, also, by the way, yesterday I alluded to the temptations of Jesus. Notice that's where the devil tried to get Jesus. It's, if you are the Son of God, if you are somebody, prove it. And that if calls us into question. And so the prove it is, prove it by turning the bread into, or the stones into bread, you know, use your power to prove it. Or throw yourself down from the pinnacle and prove that you're a real somebody with God. Make him take care of you. Manipulate God to prove it. Or, hey, I'll give you all the kingdoms of the earth. If you have power over people, then you really know you're somebody. And Jesus turned each one of those away. I don't have to prove it. I am the Son of God. And the gospel invites us into that. I am who I am by the grace of God. And I can live in that assurance that I am God created and God loved and made somebody worthwhile by the loving and care of God. Now, when we don't buy into that with faith, what we do is we have to make our somebody work. And that becomes the essence of sin. You see, because I'm trying to make my fantasy work, then I can't see myself for who I am. I have to try to make myself be something more than I am to fit what I'm trying to be. So I have to walk around. If I think I really should be 2 inches taller, I go through life like this. Or if I think I shouldn't be seen, I go through life like this, hoping nobody sees me. So we push and hold and strain and squeeze ourselves so that we don't let the world in and make sure that we live up to some image that we think we have to be. Also, I can't see you for who you are. I have to make you support the somebody I'm trying to be. In other words, I can't love you for who you are. I have to manipulate you to make you like me or do whatever I think is needed. Now, like is one trip. If I see myself, my worth, my identity in being a failure, I may have to be such a failure that I get you to take care of me or rescue me. A message I got as I grew up was, be responsible. Be responsible. If you're responsible for other people, like my little brothers and so forth, then you'll really be somebody. Now, as a counselor, I've had to really get rid of that. Because if I am in a session trying to be responsible for someone, and if my whole identity rides on my being responsible, then I have to make my being responsible work. And I can't respond to the person for who they are. I have to make sure that the counseling works and that they get help and they solve their problem. And I have to manipulate them to make them do it for my sake. Not really being free to truly let go and respect and care for them as a person. So I distort the way I see people and relate to them. And that becomes the basis of sin. And also then I distort the way I relate to the world, because I often use the things of the world to build up my somebody. So I'm not free to use money for what it is. I have to use money to make my somebody work. And I build bigger barns. So, in these ways, we distort our relationships. We manipulate and have to use things differently than what they are. And in that sense, we sin. We violate all of our relationships. I also have to make God, you know, in Philip's language, your God is too small. I have to make him fit my somebody. So I try to manipulate God too. I can be very religious. I may have a religious somebody I'm living up to. I can do good things, but I can do them in a destructive way. Like smothering love. The mother who has to love her child and in that way destroys the relationship. Because her identity is tied up with her doing. And so there's too much freedom. Okay, that's where we're coming from. What we dealt with yesterday. And the issue, I mentioned the bigger barns. The problem is that we're all like the rich man, in that to a great extent our somebodies are working for us. And we're like the man by the pool of Bethsaida, who, you know, the situation where he moans, gee, won't somebody put me into the pool? I've been waiting here for 30-some years, and woe is me. And then we raise the question, you remember what he was asked? Jesus says, do you want to be healed? And what a dumb question to ask a guy that's been there waiting for 30-some years for someone to help him into the pool. No. Because Jesus knew that if he healed him, it would be quite a shock to his system, because he no longer would be the man who had waited for 30 years for someone to put him into the pool. And that was his identity. In that way, we often want our problems, because they are the source of our identity. We want our life to be the way it is, and we hang on to it. So a very penetrating question is, do you want to be healed? Talking about in this formula then is awareness. Are you aware that you're dead? We can grow in a lifetime, throughout a lifetime, becoming aware of how we deaden ourselves. It's an ongoing process. This is why the life of the Christian can be an ongoing growth, called sanctification. We call it confession of sin. Confession of the ways in which I distort and block and deaden my life and destructive in the process. And confession can be an ongoing discovery. Rather than assuming that we've got it down now to where there's only a couple of little sins that we've got problems with, to see it in the much broader sense that we live in a state of sin, a whole condition, a whole way of life of sin, and to grow in our awareness of that. Redecision. These are the psychological or the TA terms. We can translate them into language. Redecision is that act of faith. However we describe that decision of faith, I am somebody by the grace of God, is a redecision, rather than I am a nobody because I don't know who I am. And the restructuring then is the opening up to the will of God. It is seeking first the kingdom of God and his righteousness. It is learning the things that make for peace. And there's a whole process of learning to open up to the capacities that we have as a person created by God. Okay, that you who were here yesterday, was that similar to what we did? Okay, felt the need to create that framework. Okay, now, let's take a look today then at how we function as people. What are some of the categories we can look at? These are coming out of the Minnesota Couples Communication course, which are, they call it an awareness wheel. And it's a very useful tool, I've found. First, we are sensing. We use our various capacities, our basic senses, sight, hearing, taste, smell, touch, and whatever the extrasensory stuff might be about. But we have a way of letting the world in to us. And then as we do, we interpret. We are constantly interpreting what we have let into us. And then we experience feeling response within us. Something happens inside of us, some kind of reaction. Then we have a sense of what it is we want, and we experience an intending, a beginning to move out, a wanting something. And then we move to the expressing or acting on what it is we want. Now actually it doesn't need to work in a progression like that. We can move from one to the other. We might move very quickly to a reaction. If you stick a person with a pin, he doesn't interpret it. The body is designed to react and express automatically a reaction to pain. So you can actually go in any combination of these. What we'd like to do today is then take a look at some of these. We will probably start with these three today, and under the title, Alive to the World. How do we open up to what the world is and let the world into us? And we'd like to explore that. Also in the context of what we're talking about, with each of these, we could take a look at what it would mean to open our sensing or block it and distort it. What it would mean to confuse our interpreting or sense the truth, be open to the truth, to the way things are. What it means in terms of feelings to be alive in our body, vital, or to be dead in our feeling states. What it means to be ambivalent and unsure or rigid in our intending, or to be open and to be able to move with intentionality and yet with a responsiveness to life. Or expressing what it means to be bound or tightened in the way we express, or to be open to let out what's in us. These are the issues with each of those. Okay, now, I like to get past some of the talking so I can get on to having some things happen with you. Notice some of you came in after I made some comments. I'm going to involve people in a process of getting together with other people, which is the way to get the most out of the class, but you're free to do or not do. But I would invite you to come on down and so you can have opportunity to meet some of these people and get with them if you would like to. What I'd like to have you do now is to pick up your chair and stand up and then move around and look around and find someone you would like to be with as a partner. And after you pick the partner, then I'd like to have the two of you pick two more people, another set, and then the four of you sit down in a circle facing each other. Okay, any questions on that? Okay, everyone please stand up. Know that everyone else is as anxious as you are about finding someone, so just move out and decide to go get who you want. Now, I'd like to have you get centered in your chair, sit up straight so your spine is making your whole body available. Often by the way we sit, we cut off parts of our body to our awareness. And this is not to sit rigid, but to begin to let your skeleton hold your body for you. Okay. And then close your eyes. What I'd like to do now is to take you into your body. I'd like to have you move your awareness inside of yourself. And as you do, be aware of the thoughts that are coming through your mind. Just watch them. Okay, and then let your thoughts begin to go. Don't get involved in them. Let them slow down. Let your thinking slow down. Move more in touch with your body. Move down into your breathing. Move your awareness down to your feet. Let yourself be aware rather than to do an introspection. Introspection is looking for something. And when you're looking for something, you often will only let yourself see certain things because you are in the act of looking. Awareness is a being with whatever is there. So let go and just be with your feet, bottoms of your feet, your toes. And as you move, just let yourself note whatever you discover. Ankles. Calves. Knees. Thighs. Be aware of the extent to which you're trusting the chair. Move your awareness on up your spine. Be aware of those parts of you that are difficult to be aware of. Maybe notice some tensions. Notice the letting go as you bring your awareness into parts. Each vertebrae. Up to your shoulders. Your shoulder blades. Move on out your right arm. Your forearm. Palm of your hands. Each of your fingers. And move your awareness to your abdomen. Let yourself be aware of your heartbeat. Move your awareness to your breathing without affecting your breathing. And be aware of how difficult that is. Move your awareness to your throat. Behind your eyes, your ears. Hips. Cheeks. Your jaw. Forehead. And the top of your head. Continue to be aware of what's happening with your body. Continue as I ask you now to open your eyes slowly so that you begin to see your group. Move your awareness into your body, continuing to be aware so you know what happens as you open your eyes and see people. And now, each of you share just as it comes to you. Start with the phrase, I am aware of this happening. I'm aware of something going on in my body. And report whatever it is you're aware of right now as you're there with your group. I'm aware that I just had to move my knee. I'm aware that my stomach's growling. I'm aware of the tension in my shoulders. Whatever it is, just share whatever you're aware of right now with your group, okay? Okay, what I'd like to have you do now, again, close your eyes, move back in and be aware of what's happening in your body now as you begin to be involved with people. Okay, and again, open your eyes and share what you're aware of right now is happening. Okay? Okay. May I have your attention again? One of the natures of process exercises is that you will experience being interrupted, and that there is a lot more you could say about what you've just done. It's a chance to give you a chance to experience something and to share some initial impressions and to be aware of some other things, and then we'll move on rather than take all the time it would take to talk about everything you've experienced in the last 2 minutes.
A chance to realize how other people.
And also a chance to tune into some other people briefly. Okay, let me make some guesses about some things that happened. And when I asked you to close your eyes, some people resisted that, because for some it's difficult to even think about closing their eyes and going into themselves. They like to keep their eyes open and alert. Others found it easy to go inside. We can be aware of our thinking. Our thinking is a process that is going on that we can look at and watch and be aware of. We don't have to be totally invested in our thinking, although often we are. We are so caught up in our thoughts that we are totally involved with our thinking. But we can also separate ourselves, and that's very useful to learn, and something we often do with people in counseling, because our mind is saying a lot of things that we don't have to believe or we don't have to invest energy in. And we can hear those thoughts go by and say, that was interesting. You know, and let it go rather than going with it. So let yourself watch your thinking at times. I let you move your awareness to your feet. And there's often a right-left orientation that you can notice. Ricky was just reporting the difference.
Yes, I was aware that as I sat that I really, you know, my right leg was really very straight. My foot was flat on the floor. If I made a footprint, it would be, you know, really well balanced. My left leg leaned over to the side, and yet looking at them from above, they looked as though they were both pretty well centered. And I'm aware that I wear out my shoes on the left foot a little on the outside edge. Which was kind of a check that, hey, that is the way I do carry my body.
Often there are two parts to our personality, and they're often represented by our right and left side. And often then the right and left brain orientation is a part of that. We'll deal more with that. But you can notice how how you function differently on each side. Often get some smiles when I say, are you trusting the chair? And people go, and not realizing how much tension we are investing in holding. And as you move through your body, you may have been surprised at the places where you were holding yourself. And this holding, this tension, this kind of energy is often wasted energy. You see, our personalities are incorporated into our bodies. Our body remembers the past, as well as our thoughts, as well as our feelings. So our body remembers. I had an experience that really brought that home to me. I was having some body work done where they do some very deep massage to kind of open up parts of the body. And there's a spot right in the middle of my back. And when that spot is touched very strongly, I would gag. And he'd stop, and the gagging would stop. He'd go back and touch it, and I would gag. And it was like an experience at the end of a crying jag, where one is just gasping. One has cried so hard that one is gasping for air and finally just holds breath, which is what I finally did. And I, you know, didn't have a visual memory of that, but I had a kind of feeling memory. It felt like something that happened in the past, and I'm not sure what that's all about, but our body does remember. There are different kinds of pain when this is being done. Some pain just hurts, and other times you touch a person on a certain part of their body, and they experience fear, anxiety, and that's a much different kind of pain. That's a very frightening, hurtful kind of pain. Other pain we can often bear, but it's when it's connected with fear that it becomes so unbearable. Okay, and as you moved up your spine into your shoulders, you may have felt some of the things you're carrying in your shoulders. You may have experienced an opening. Often if we go towards the parts that feel tense or where we have pain in our body, we can let go of what that's about. Now, our awareness is what brings us into the present and tunes into the present. What's going on in the body is a memory of the past. So often my shoulder may be tight like that just because I'm relating what's happening to something that happened in the past, and I feel the need to be tense. And I move my awareness into that, and it just goes. And it's a whole different feeling. So we can move our awareness. Now, what we often do is try to move away from pain rather than towards it. When you come out of a swimming pool and the air is cold, you go, we try to move away from the pain of the cold. And someone said to me, hey, don't be afraid of it. You can enjoy the cold too. Huh? But I tried it, and I relaxed and said, okay. And it was far less cold.
For those of you who try the sauna, remember that when you go into the plunge.
Yeah.
Let it in.
Decide to enjoy it and let it in, rather than fight it. If you fight it, you go in, and it feels horrible. Yes. Right, you learn the techniques of moving into the pain and dissipating it rather than fighting it, which multiplies it. Yeah, great. Okay, some other things. You may have discovered as you move to your stomach some of your tension and tightness. We've got a lot of the ways we control our feelings, and we'll talk more about that related here. Some people do hear their heartbeat, and sometimes for the first time, learning that they can listen to their body. We'll talk about breathing in a minute. The throat is another area of a great deal of control. A lot of emotions get held, or thoughts get held in our throat. Sometimes a lot of our feelings of hostility are locked in our jaw. When you move to your jaw, you may have felt it drop open. Some of that. That's often located in our jaw.
When I was teaching my first year out of college,
I was teaching kids who were about 3 years younger than I was, and they did some funny things that the year before I would have been right in the middle of doing some of them. You know. Mm-hmm. And but I couldn't. I mean, if I was going to maintain control in the classroom, I was going to have a certain amount of respect. And I used the term, I put on a steel jaw. I really tightened up my jaw, and my forehead came down and so forth to keep them laughing. You know, I really felt I had to have a little control there, but I put on a steel jaw. And that's the same tension in the jaw to keep myself from having another reaction to it, another feeling to it.
And so you also might have experienced some relaxing in your face. When I had you move up behind your eyes, often you find a lot of tension there. We program to a great extent what we're going to see. Mm-hmm. And that programming is there behind our eyes, in the tensions of how and what we will let ourselves see and not see. And so we can just be aware of that at this point. That, hey, I'm a great deal of how I think life is going to be for me is already programmed into how I'm living my life. And I make it happen because I only let myself relate to what fits and try to cut out a lot of the other things. Okay. Any comments coming out of your experience that you want to share with the group? Okay. And the Lord breathed into their nostrils the breath of life. Do we let the world in through our breathing? God has given us air as a great source of vitality. Let's explore that a bit. Close your eyes again and get centered. Okay, just let yourself breathe quietly. Now let yourself take a good, full, deep breath of air. Sit at the top for just a little bit. Be aware of what you filled. Okay, there are three compartments, in a sense, three parts of our breathing capacity. One
Those
is our...
Those who haven't exhaled, now is a good time.
I said briefly. Okay. Get back in touch with your breathing. The three divisions of your breathing capacity, one is your abdomen. One is the middle lungs, and then one is the upper lungs up near your shoulders. Now what happens in life is that we often hold our breath or cut down our breathing for one reason or another. Some people don't let themselves breathe into their abdomen. They are often trying to be strong and they breathe up into their chest and hold their chest out and up. Other people tending to want to be less obvious, don't let themselves breathe up into their upper chest, but kind of hold themselves back, hold themselves down. And so you might be aware of which compartments you filled or tended to fill. Now let's do it again. This time, start with your abdomen and fill that, and then fill your middle chest, and then fill your upper chest. Very slowly let yourself move through that, okay? And then exhale by letting out one at a time. Okay, now you very likely have much more lung capacity than you think you have. Because all of us begin to shut down our capacity in some way or another. And that also grows out of how we think about ourselves. So one of the values of jogging and other things and breathing exercises and awareness of the full range of capacity is to begin to open up and to continue through life to take in the life-giving air that God gives us, to let Him breathe into our nostrils that breath of life each day, each minute. And some people breathe as though there isn't going to be any more air. They tend to hold more breath than they let out. Other people try to be quiet. Okay, what I'd like to have you do now is find a level of breath that seems to fit this. What I want you to do is begin to hold your breath as though you're going to control your emotions. Okay, take a breath and begin to hold them with some kind of determination that you're not going to let your feelings show. Stay with it as long as you can. Become aware of those feelings that may want to come through that. Okay, you may have gotten in touch with feelings that you try to control with holding your breath in some way, limiting your breath, tensing your body. You may have gotten aware of some way in which you relate to your breathing. Again, open your eyes and just share briefly. Each one just take a short few moments to share with each other what it was you were aware of. Okay?
1 hour.
Fritz Perls says that there are four basic expressive emotions. He says anger, joy, grief, and orgasm. And by orgasm, I think he means the whole movement of love, not just the sexual orgasm, but the whole warmth feeling is meant by this. Now, these are natural emotions that happen as a child begins in life to experience their body. They are very useful emotions. They serve a very real purpose. Anger, for instance, is the way in which we mobilize ourselves to deal with a conflict in life. To not have anger is to lose some vitality, to lose a source of vitality, to deal with blocks or issues. Anger becomes a problem when it is not, anger is a result of caring about something. When you care enough for a relationship, you want to break through the block that's getting in the way. Anger then, when it's against something that is a threat to us and we desire to destroy it, can become hostility. And hostility then is an attitude more than just a feeling. It is an attitude of wanting to tear down. Hatred is a stance. It's becoming, this is my way of life. I hate that. I want to tear that down. And so what happens as we move into hostility and hatred, we begin to tie and bind our energy into that relationship. And it also then begins to tear down within us. In other words, it ain't healthy to hate because you burn up your own gut. You tie up your own energy. But anger is a natural feeling, and this is why we've heard some of the psychological approach of beginning to let anger come and be expressed, not in a destructive way, a tearing down way, but just in terms of I'm very angry and I'm feeling this anger, and I want you to know I'm angry about something. And it's letting a person know what you really care about. Now what happens then is we often get blocked in what we let ourselves feel. And it's as though we lock feelings off by tightening our breath or tightening our body. So in some families, for instance, if you're not permitted to have anger, maybe what you are permitted to have is hurt. And so one locks one's anger and then puts, it's okay to have hurt. So you have a kind of another layer of hurt. Now maybe it's even better if you can be happy. So something starts going wrong and you put on your smile and you're real happy because that's the way you're supposed to react to problems. And then you kind of get through that and that doesn't seem to work. And then you shift into the next gear, which is hurt, and you begin to feel hurt. And if you went below that, through that barrier, you may discover that what you really are is angry. You know, you've seen the person, I'm not angry. Okay. This also happens with the sexual feelings, often when they're denied. And I've had people, especially women, talk about as though they had a band across their abdomen that they feel down to a certain point and then don't feel. And that often then we block off sensations in the body, parts of our body, that we feel like we have to deny and don't let ourselves experience or feel or sense those parts. And it may be anywheres over our body. Okay.
I guess to add to that particular thing, those feelings are very real. We do have choices as to how we express them. So that if you're feeling angry, there are a variety of ways of expressing that anger. Some people, you know, would go out and chop wood. Some people run around the block and then come back in perhaps a more rational tone to say how angry they are. The same thing goes for sexual feelings or for joy. Usually that's a little easier to share, but if you are really, I don't know, I use the expression now is on a high, really feeling good, and you come into a very sober situation, then you have to, at that point, choose how you are going to react. So we do have choices in how we are going to behave, even though we acknowledge that the feelings are real, rather than necessarily covering over and say we don't feel certain things. Dale was talking about the how different families have a familiar or approved emotion. My family was one where you did not get angry. You were not allowed to get angry. Young lady, you don't get angry. You don't act like that. Now go to your room. I went to my room and I couldn't slam the door. I slammed the door because I was so mad. You do not slam the door. I had no way, because I had a little room, about 8x8. I had all this emotion going on, so I cried. That was all right, but I couldn't come out of my room till I wiped my tears and I could come out and smile. So that was approved in my family. And as a result, I have had difficulty, and I'm learning how to express some anger that's real. For me, if you got angry, you destroyed. I've had to learn some new ways to deal with that. Perhaps in your family, you had some familiar ways familiar negative feelings that were okayed and other negative feelings that were not allowed. If you could share with one of the people around you, one of those in your foursome perhaps, what was an approved, an allowed negative feeling in your home? And which ones did you not dare express?
Well, I was raised with a...
Turn to just one partner. Share with just one person, because we'd like to get...
That was a phrase that... One of the assumptions that people have often made is that a given situation makes them feel a certain way.
we talked about it yesterday in the sense of, well, you know, when it's really cloudy, that makes me feel depressed, rather than saying I am choosing to feel depressed when the clouds who are completely unaware of me happen to gather over where I am. There's also, in that way, it is a choice. There is also a way when we have a familiar negative feeling that we can choose it when we come into some kind of a negative situation. And that varies from individual to individual. I guess if we can imagine a series of cars coming down that road from Wenatchee toward 25 Mile Creek, and maybe four or five cars, and the driver in one, they're all a little bit late. And the driver in, aren't we all? That's not true. That's my choice. There are some other people who are there well ahead of time. The driver of the first car, all external situations are the same, but the driver of the first car is choosing to be angry. Oh, gee, if I'd gotten up earlier, why don't I do this? And I don't know why all these other cars are in there. Now that fellow could go faster. You know, I could get past him if he'd just get over to the side of the road. And he chooses to be angry all the way. And that is probably a very familiar feeling for him. In the next car, same physical circumstances, the next fellow chooses to use that time in a different way. Oh my gosh, all these other cars, look at what good-looking cars they're driving to drive up this dirty road. How come they always have all those good cars and the latest model, and here I am with, and he chooses to be jealous all the way. The third car perhaps is dealing with the driver, again, the same kind of physical circumstances, but chooses to be depressed all the way. I don't know why I always do it. Things like this always happen to me, and I'm always late, and everybody else is always going, and so and he depresses himself all the way. And the driver of the fourth car might be frustrated, and the driver, each person dealing with the same physical circumstances, but because of their own orientation, is making their own choice to find their very familiar negative feeling to beat themselves all the way to hopefully catch the ferry. Okay. That's a matter of how we get our familiar feelings and how we, in that sense, own our own problems. Own those feelings has a lot to do with the way we gained attention when we were very little, the kind of what we call the stroke system. Psychologists, people from way back have known that children as they grow need to be held, handled, cared for, or as the common phrase today is stroked. Children who in very clinical situations have not had physical stroking and holding develop physical symptoms. They do not develop, I think there's a medical term called marasmus. They have no affect, they are just there. We physically need that for development. As we grow older, we can take some verbal strokes in terms of recognition that can supplant some of that physical stroking. But because the body does need that, the person needs that, we will get it. If we cannot get positive strokes from our parents, like if they won't pick us up when we are smiling happily, we may just cry a little and get some attention that way. Or the situation with the one-year-old who has just learned to walk, and just tottering all over, and everybody is praising them, and look at Johnny, and look at Johnny walk, and so forth. And the next day, he needs a little attention from mother, and he walks across, and mom still praises him. Now, 2 weeks down the road, you expect him to walk. He walks across, nobody says anything. Well, got to have a new way to get a little bit of attention. Sometimes, and I can recall very clearly one of our children, Dale and I were really involved in some conversation at the table, and one of the children was sitting in a high chair, and apparently at the first time, tipped off a glass onto the floor.